And we're going to be looking at Hebrews chapter 2 tonight. And I'm just going to pull out three thoughts from that as I read through it earlier this week. And three thoughts that I thought would be helpful to share with you. As most of you will probably know, I haven't had loads of time to prepare this week. Ruth has been in hospital since Wednesday. So I've been trying to balance two children, work, and everything else going on. So that's been interesting. But it's been really good at the same time to have this passage to reflect on and to think about in that time. So reading from Hebrews chapter 2, reading from verse 1. We must pay more careful attention, therefore, to what we have heard, so that we do not drift away. For if the message spoken by angels is binding, and every violation and disobedience received is just punishment, how shall we escape if we ignore such a great salvation? This salvation, which was first announced by the Lord, was confirmed to us by those who had heard him. God also testified to it by signs, wonders, various miracles, gifts of the Holy Spirit, distributed according to his will. It is not to angels he has subjected the world to come, about which we are speaking, but there is a place where someone has testified. What is man that you are mindful of him? The Son of Man that you care for him? You made him a little lower than the angels. You crowned him with glory and honour and put everything under his feet. In putting everything under him, God left nothing that is not subject to him. Yet at present we do not see everything subject to him. But we see Jesus, who is made a little lower than the angels, now crowned with glory and honour because he suffered death, so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. In bringing many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering. Both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family, so Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. He says, I will declare your name to my brothers. In the presence of the congregation, I will sing your praises. And again, I will put my trust in him. And again he says, here am I and the children God has given me. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who are all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it is not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. For this reason he had to be made like his brothers in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. So that's perfect timing as we go through the book of Hebrews. At the start of Advent, we have a passage there about the incarnation, what it means to be thinking about in the run-up to Christmas, a God who chose to come to earth. And the first thought I've got, I don't know how many of you are fans of the movie Big, or perhaps the more modern versions like 13 Going on 30 and various ones like that. Or perhaps if you're more old school, you've read the book The Prince and the Pauper. And we seem to have this recurring theme in literature and in film about wanting to be somebody different, to experience a different life, to have a complete change. But of course, there is one common thread to all of those, isn't the person wanting to change, wanting a different experience, does it on the basis that what they've got now isn't that great, and what they're looking to do is going to be wonderful. So you've got him Big as a young lad, desperate to see what it's like to be older, thinks that all his problems will be solved by being older. And you've then got the prince and the pauper, the prince desperate to experience what normal life is like, the pauper desperate to experience what being a prince would be like. People thinking that grass is greener on the other side of the fence. Well, here in this passage, and throughout the whole of the Bible, we have a story of complete transformation. A God who wants to experience something different. But he doesn't want it for the reasons that those stories have of wanting to experience something different. He comes to experience something different for us. He certainly knew that what he was going to be experiencing was definitely not going to be an improvement. In no way, shape or form could you see that leaving the glory of heaven to come and be on this earth was going to be an improvement. But God chose, because of his love for us, to become fully human. Jesus had the ultimate transformation, experiencing fully what it meant to be human. And that ultimate change meant he came from heaven to earth. He came from riches to poverty. He went from being worshipped to being despised. He went from being honoured to being rejected. From being all-powerful to a powerless baby in a manger. He went from being eternal to facing death. And I found this poem, which was written by Augustine, and which again reflects on something of that. Man's maker was made man, that he, ruler of the stars, might nurse at his mother's breast, that the bread might hunger, the fountain thirst, the light sleep, the way be tired on its journey, that the truth might be accused of false witness, the teacher beaten with whips, the foundation be suspended on wood, that strength might grow weak, that the healer might be wounded, that life might die. That's the God who we come to worship. That's the God who chose to come to this earth and experience that complete transformation from being the God of all the universe, living in perfection, living in a holy heaven where angels, countless angels, worshipped him, where the slightest command was instantly obeyed, to coming and living on this earth and facing the complete antithesis of that. That's what we remember at this time of year. That is the ultimate transformation. And it wasn't done for Jesus to have a better life. It was done so that we can have a better life. So that's the first thought for you this evening. Fully human. That's the God that we come to worship, who experienced full humanity here on earth. The next point to reflect on is the fact that he wasn't ashamed. Now, I don't know about you, but at times we're ashamed of ourselves. Certainly, parents have experiences of being ashamed of their children, normally when they're kicking off somewhere in the public, and you definitely wish the ground would swallow up whole, and all the disapproving looks you might be getting. And certainly, and I think it's a rite of passage as a dad, you should be out there to embarrass your children. You know, that's part of what your role is as a dad, I'm led to believe, is to be as embarrassing as possible for our children. And certainly, you know, being ashamed and being ashamed perhaps of those who are close to us is part of what we experience of life. And increasingly, I think, driven partly by social media and generally the media's focus on sort of the cult of me, we're increasingly worried about what people think of us. And so that feeling of not living up to a standard, not living up to even our own expectations, let alone sometimes, in fact often, our own expectations that are higher than the expectations of others, and curating a picture of ourselves that we want other people to see. We only want people to see the bits of us that we feel comfortable with them seeing. So shame is perhaps a part of the human experience, part of the way that drives the way that we behave in life. But Jesus says something really, really important, therefore, here. Jesus says, both the one who makes people holy and those who are made holy are the same family. So Jesus is not afraid to call them brothers and sisters. He says, I will declare your name to my brothers and sisters. In the house of God, he's going to sing our praises. Jesus sees us completely. So he doesn't see that curated image that we might portray on social media. He doesn't just see the face that we put on when we go out the front door in the morning when we're allowed to. He doesn't just see the good side of us. He doesn't just see the top half of us on a Zoom call. He sees the whole of us. He sees everything about us. And you'd think that would make him go, I'm just sorry, you're just not living up to what I expect of you. But what he actually says is he's going to declare our name in God's house. He's going to celebrate us. He's not ashamed of us. And I think that's really encouraging, isn't it? At a time when perhaps we're really struggling. So many people right now are struggling with their mental health. They feel that they've perhaps let themselves down, they've let other people down. They're struggling with what their life looks like and how they're going to move forward into next year. Especially perhaps as we come into another year after a difficult year that's passed. So many people are thinking, well, how do I improve? How do I do better next year? But God says, look, see yourself through my eyes. I've made you holy. We thought about how God has made us holy. We'll think about that a bit more in a moment. Look at yourselves in the way that I look at you. I see you as somebody I want to shout about in God's presence. I want to shout about you when you're in the company of believers. I don't want to ignore you. I don't want to pass you by. I don't want to pretend you're not with me. I want to extol you. I want to shout about you. So next time you're feeling down about yourself, next time you're thinking you've let yourself down, you've let other people down, and most importantly that you've let God down, remember, he loves you and he isn't ashamed of you. He will never be ashamed of you. As one of his children, you are co-heirs with Christ. You are brothers and sisters of the holiest person who's ever walked on the face of this earth. And when he looks at you as somebody who's been brought into his family, he sees you with that same white perfection as God sees him himself. That is how you're seen today by the Lord Jesus Christ. So far we've thought about a God who chose to be fully human, who chose to come and experience all the depravity that this world offers, that all of the things that make this world a tough and difficult place to be, to experience all the things we have to go through. We've thought about a God who is not ashamed to call you his brothers and sisters, who will shout your name. And finally, and the bit really that makes all of those two things real and important, is the fact we come to a God who is an atoner and helper. We didn't come to a God who sort of says, I want you to be better, I want you to do things, but just go away and get on with it by yourselves. It's up to you to do it. It says this: for this reason, he had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. The reason he had to become fully human, the reason he had to experience all the things far worse than any of us will probably have to face on this earth, was because that was the only way he could make full atonement. He wasn't a partial atonement. It wasn't a stopgap until something better could be found. It's not a, I've got most of it sorted for you, but you've got to finish off this bit for yourself. It's not like those kits you can buy where everything's already cut and generally speaking all the bits are there and ready to use, but you've still got the final bit to do to make it look good, and normally it doesn't work. No, it's not like that. He has made full atonement. And he was the only one who could do that because he came and experienced our humanity. And he goes on to say, because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. Because he was fully human, because he has experienced the challenges that this world faces us, he understands what it's like, but he came through. When we fail, when we muck up, when we don't live up to the standard that God sets, he always did. At no point, at any point, in nothing that he did, thought, said, during the whole of his life here on earth, could anybody have picked him up and said, you failed to truly live up to God's law. So many tried to pick faults. But he was always, as James reminded us this morning, able to turn the question round, see where they were going, and say, no, you've got it wrong. You're looking at things in the wrong way. God's law, God's way, truly, is this. And because he's been through all of that, because he suffered in the way that we will suffer, because he's been tempted in the way that we are tempted, he's able to help us. He's able to help us face it. He's able to understand when we fail and draw us back and offer us full atonement. Of course, there is one important element in that. People can generally only help you if you ask them for that help. And the biggest challenge so often facing Jesus being able to help us in our challenges is the fact that we are so slow to turn to him to ask for that help. So 3 points there about that passage. No great deep insights here. And I don't know about you, but some of the wording in that passage is quite hard to get your head around. But I've really just picked on 3 things which were, for me, just really helpful at this time. What impact should these things have for us? Well, understand just how much God wanted to rescue you because he was willing to come into this world and be fully human. To understand how God sees you, how therefore we should treat others in the family and outside of the family of God in the same way that he treats us. We should never shame other people, and also we should never feel shamed by God because he loves us and sees us in the way that he knows we will be on that day of glory. And thirdly, turn to Jesus for help. He's been there, he understands. And understand that when we fail, we're not lost because he has given full atonement. No ifs, no buts, no maybes, full atonement if we will just ask him for that help. So hopefully that will just help you as in the run-up to this Christmas time to reflect on what it means for the God of all creation to enter this humanity, to be born as a little baby here on this earth, and to, through that, offer full atonement, to offer you help when you are facing the challenges that living on this earth will inevitably bring, to know that God is there with you, he knows what it's like, and he's ready to lead you through it.